Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Maddening!
Welcome to the India Explained podcast, recorded in London and San Francisco. One take, unscripted, no rehearsal. Hey, Bunty, greetings from San Francisco, and happy, is it what, Guy Fawkes Day? Is that what it's called?
It's bonfire night. So today I'm sitting outside in my back garden, Rohit, in London, and I've got a fire going. It's a small fire. And our listeners, if the sound gets picked up, you can hear in the distant background small staccato of noises. They'll come up and down sometimes, and that's basically people letting off fireworks to celebrate bonfire night. So today's 5th of November. Remember the 5th of November.
Okay.
And this was about Guy Fawkes and the bonfire night and this gunpowder plot, which inspires the plot to blow up the parliament. But anyway, we won't talk about that. But yeah, I'm sitting outside. But in advance, I want to apologize to our listeners that in case you hear fireworks, I think it's intentional because I thought that it'll be interesting to add to the mood.
Well, speaking of parliament and all of that, right, that it's interesting that this publication called The Wire, which is a non-profit, and I should just say in the interest of disclosure that I've written a couple of pieces for them, maybe one or two, a couple of years ago, I think around the time they founded, they are accused by critics of wanting to symbolically blow up the Indian parliament, or specifically the, you know, parliament as inhabited by the Modi government. They did a story a while ago, and we spoke about it, which you know, mentioned the phenomenal increase in turnover that a company owned by Jay Shah, son of Amit Shah, the BJP president, had shown. And they were given a legal notice, and apparently they've challenged the legal notice, and I think the decision's gone in their favor. But The Wire has done another story. This time, it's not really you know, something that is making a legalistic argument, so it can't be challenged, but it's making a very powerful, in my view, strong argument about cronyism. And it's specifically about the BJP, but we can make a similar argument about the Congress, I should say. So the story basically says that the National Security advisor, you know, Ajit Doval, who was a member of RAW, I think, he has a son by the name of Shaurya Doval. And this guy is an MBA educated, Wharton educated MBA. I think he worked for Goldman Sachs, or one of those big banks in the US, and then he came back some years ago and he founded a think tank called the India Foundation. Now, the India Foundation, there was a topic of a terrific story by Outlook in 2015. They mentioned that, you know, it's in a very tony area of Delhi, but it's very unobtrusive. There's a very basic board, nobody knows much about it. This think tank is super powerful. You know, in 2015 or 16, they had something about the economy, or I think it was maybe even before the election, they called finance ministers or finance-related officials from 35 or 40 countries to explain to them what Modi's, you know, the Modi government and Modi's vision for the economy would be if he got, you know, elected. And in the articles I was reading, someone said that, you know, if you're not invited to this, you're nothing. This think tank, as something that is non-partisan or is technically independent, you know, and like a non-government non-profit, it has ministers from the BJP government serving in various capacities. There's, you know, Nirmala Sitharaman, there's M.J. Akbar. It also has, as one of its directors, I believe, Ram Madhav, whose name is written as Ram Madhav Varanasi, who's a pretty senior-ranking person in the RSS and is now also a minister. You know, he's also a member of the... I don't know if he's a minister. He's also a member of the Modi government. So, you know, these are just blatant conflicts of interest because this is a third party and you have people from the ministry, actually from the government, from the Modi government, actually serving in those capacities. I think it was Shashi Tharoor who pointed out on Twitter that this actually violates a kind of code of conduct that the Indian government has. There's also some Saudi prince or some Saudi sheikh or someone who's involved in this mix. And, you know, finally, I'll just sort of mention that, you know, this think tanks have been a really key player for the Modi project of consolidating public opinion. There's another foundation called the Vivekananda Foundation, and Ajit Doval, Chaurya Doval's father, was involved with that. And that was a complete, you know, right-wing think tank. And I think we've brought this up in a couple of episodes earlier, that the Modi government or the right-wing project was very, very effective in actually using this whole discourse of corruption, right, as a kind of election plank. But what they did was they used that to get middle-class support in the India Against Corruption movement, which, you know, spawned Kejriwal in a sense. It was a complete right-wing movement. You know, it was a very smart tactical understanding that there's a kind of anger at the Congress and there's a general Indian anger at corruption. And then those votes were, you know, those databases, those votes, or those, that political capital that had been generated was very, very effectively mobilized by the BJP's IT team for them. So this is where we stand. And, you know, I know the journalist who's written it a little bit, Swati Chaturvedi. She has the handle of Benjal on Twitter, and she's done some excellent stories. You know, she mentioned something interesting that, there are no legal claims made here. So there's nothing, you know, there's no scope for defamation. Everything is fact-based. But apparently the BJP has given the, it's not going to send any of its spokespersons, and it's sent a message out to all the television channels. Do not carry this story. Do not say much about it. Let it just die a natural death. Two final thoughts, and then I'll turn it over to you, Banti. Chaurya Doval didn't really answer the questions that The Wire posed to him before running the story, and B, the finances of this organization are very, very sketchy. They claim they get advertising, but they bring out, like, you know, one journal like every 3 months. And even if you have this nominal journal and people are spending vast sums of money to bring out a half page or a full page ad, I mean, what is that money really for? Is I think the underlying question.
Yeah, you know, there are so many interesting points to be made on this one. All of this, you know, Mamata Banerjee sold her paintings, right? So this has a painting whiff to it. So this guy, Doval's son, Doval Jr., let's call him Doval Jr. Doval Jr. isn't in the business of painting. He's in the business of gaming opinions, right? Which is fine. You know, there are people who do that, make a living out of that. In fact, one of the biggest scams going is the World Economic Forum, which is basically a group of very ultra-prosperous people coming together in a very lush context, backslapping each other. So it's almost the counterpoint to the NGO bazi that you see, which is, you know, Jhola Bindi, and, you know, the world's wrong and we must put it right. World Economic Forum, that is a think tank where people are saying the world is right, we are the ones who are making it right.
It's sort of kind of social engineering, right?
Correct. So I think think tanks, you know, I have a mixed opinion on think tanks. There are some think tanks that do really credible research analysis and feed into upstream policy positions. And I'm aware and have had working relationships with some of these think tanks in Britain. So I'm not going to slag off think tanks in general. Now, cut to South Delhi randomness, where, you know, this is kind of basically a nameplate. And there is a nameplate and a bank account, which rolls over on the back of, you know, advertising cash. It just seems that, you know, has this organization, with its, you know, whether it's got ministerial backing or not, has it produced a piece of thinking? Let's forget for the moment, you know, the money's involved. Has it produced a bit of thinking that has influenced or shaped or contested any kind of policy? Because two things a think tank can do. One is to say that, you know, here's what we've researched and found out, and therefore the policy that needs to come out of this area should be this. The other thing could be that, you know, we've done a bit of thinking, we didn't do any research or anything, but we looked at how current things are operating, and we'd like to contest this position that they're going. My moot point is, wherever your address is and however you're making your money, you can only be a think tank if you're thinking about something and making a difference.
Super point.
Doval Jr., my question is, what thought piece has Doval Jr. put in front of people?
Thank you. I mean, these are excellent points. I think you've just gone to the heart of it, and I'll just respond to that. In fact, this story, I think that the Wire story, pardon me, and then the Outlook India story both do mention it. they've produced things where the ideological slant is very clearly visible. You know, stuff like conversion threat to India, or, you know, jihadi terrorism and so on and so forth. And, you know, again, one might say, playing devil's advocate, that, okay, they're coming from a right-of-center Hindu-majoritarian viewpoint, and one may disagree with the foundation, but even within that framework, no matter what one's disagreements are with the assumptions or how problematic one sees them as, they can be good work. That's kind of the model of, I'd say, you know, American conservative think tanks like the Heritage Foundation or the Cato Institute, which is, you know, out-and-out libertarian, or the Hoover Institution, which is a conservative think tank at Stanford. And, you know, you go to their website and you'll see that they're very clearly pro-free market, and they do think Islamic terrorism is a problem in a way that, you know, a center-left or a left think tank would, you know, would not sort of propose, right? They would be...
Right.
But within that, they produce reports where there's genuine research. And, you know, I've not gone hunting for these reports. I've not read them. I should be honest about that. But the thing is, if the work is good, it sort of bubbles up. You know, it turns up. It's commented on. It comes into the public sphere. The work itself is just not there in the public sphere. So it really does seem that this think tank is a pretext for something else. Now, I don't want to, you know, sound like a conspiracy theorist here, but I do think there is the larger point. And the wire has just stuck to the point of conflict of interest. And I think that fundamental point is a very valid point.
Right. I think so. This guy, you know, is his dad's close to the administration and on the back of... But I think, you know what? Let's be fair. This is not something that is unique to Doval Jr. There are other people who've done it. And other people in other areas of the political spectrum. It's just, I think the difficulty is, as you said, the whole BJP project was conceived around, you know, curing India from corruption. And I think with the passage of time, you suddenly realize that maybe the kind of vision that BJP was holding up as being completely above board and beyond scrutiny, that kind of whole veneer is faltering, and there are points. I wish Doval Jr.'s think tank all the best. You know, if he produces credible thinking, which is kind of linked to our foreign policy positions, like having a fight with China at any given point in time, or, you know, rubbing off some other people the wrong way, best of luck to him if that's what that think tank does. And I think what begs the question is, where's the counterpoint to these policy positions? Because in every industry, including the think tank business, if somebody's saying let's go right, there has to be an organization that says let's go left.
Right.
And I'd be very interested to seeing, you know whether there is a kind of a Congress-backed think tank, which takes positions on international policy and you know, just hear them out and see what they do. Because this guy, as you said, at one point was saying that, you know, we'll be overrun with Islamic terrorism because of the rate at which demographics are shifting in certain parts of the country. Those are kind of like, it seems like very kind of linear arguments. But again, we qualify these comments by saying that we are not very familiar with Doval Jr.'s think tank. And only because, you know, it's never made the news apart from in this instance. And in this instance, he's made the news because of nepotism. And we are calling it out for what it is.
Right. And, you know, final point, you know, I'll just say that the right, their argument has been, and one should put forth their argument in the interest of fairness, their argument has been that, look, a lot of the NGOs that got support from the Congress, you know, they were... Their point is that those are like de facto pro-Congress NGOs. Now, I actually know a couple of people who work in them from a social justice perspective, and their point is that this is rubbish. It's we stand for secular values, whatever that is. We stand for inclusive values. And maybe there is a kind of ideological alignment there. But they say that we have also bitterly and strongly often opposed Congress policies. There are others who say that the Congress was vicious towards NGOs that, you know, didn't toe its line. So there's a lot of he said, she said going on out here. But in the right-wing imagination, in the popular right-wing imagination, the kind of typical Indian NGO, Jholawala NGO, has been a kind of Congress. For them, it is completely contiguous with the Congress. So they are basically seeing this as a kind of counterpoint. And then my concluding thought is that I think the BJP's credibility is undermined by the fact that, you know, from the time Modi came to power, there's been a steady kind of, you know, stream of misinformation.
Right.
And I'm not talking about PR, right? I'm not talking about Modi's PR. That is what it is. But I'm saying that, you know, flat out lies. Like there was a completely like awfully like syrupy story about Jay Shah that was put out by the editors of The Quint, that he's such a good bacha. When his dad was in jail, he used to, you know, get amras and dhokla fresh from Gujarat, you know. And then earlier there were these stories about Arun Jaitley as, you know, Mother Teresa. And then there were these stories about Doval himself, that he was India's James Bond. And, you know, he went undercover in Pakistan, worked as a rickshawala, you know, infiltrated terrorist cells. He also, like, you know, dressed up as a Sardar. Now, if you look at his physical build, you know, very unrealistic for him to pass as a Sardar. And I don't want to, like, stereotype him. But, you know, and I remember Swati herself, I think it was Swati who wrote this article. She clarified that, look, this is just hokum. At some point of time, he was India's point man in Islamabad.
Right.
There was an embassy. Right. And, you know, obviously, embassies, even if they're going to put spies, they're not going to call him spy. So he may have been, you know, I don't know, he may have been like cultural attaché.
Cultural officer.
Maybe he was, you know, his official designation was like guy in charge of stationery, right, to the rest of the staff, giving weekly pencil rubber. I don't know, man, but that's what he did. He was never this James Bond figure. But all right, so I think we leave it at that, open-ended.
Okay.
And we'll come back with another story soon. Okay, take care, buddy.
Okay, chalo, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.